Everything we need to know in life we learned in kindergarten, or so I've heard. Robert Fulham's classic book with this title makes this clear in a concise and humorously sweet manner. And in between, share everything, play fair, don't hit people, and wash your hands before you eat, is this gem: say sorry when you hurt someone. The thing is, though, sorry's not really enough. A sorry standing alone, said without intention or meaning, can actually extend the hurt. And sorry said without truth-telling can actually be a lie. I don't think most of us learned how to say sorry or how to apologize well, even in kindergarten, even though sorry is a bit of a Canadian pastime. I've apologized to inanimate objects. Are there any Canadians here? You know, you bump into the table, sorry, you know? Are you really? I mean, but I've seen this kind of scene play itself out in playgroups and preschool settings. A kid takes a toy, the other kid starts crying, and the parent, embarrassed that his or her kid has caused the trouble, tells her kid to apologize, say sorry, right? And I'm gonna use names from a favorite podcast of mine. Sandin, say sorry to Mark. Sandin, who is not feeling sorry at all, is made to face Mark and say sorry, and he says it sort of like Kendall did in the demonstration with the kids, sorry. Now they're both crying. Now Mark's parent, knowing that the next step must be forgiveness, tells her kid to say it's okay, and they have to maybe force a hug or a handshake, and now play nice. Both kids are unhappy, and the parents feel they've somehow done the right thing, and we all feel like we bungled through this thing called an apology, right? And many of us have that kind of background in apologizing, and that's where it ends. This is where our knowledge as a culture tends to end. Say I'm sorry, it's okay, and we smooth it over somehow, and we work through. But I really think that our inability to apologize is not serving us well. We often feel obliged to say it's okay when we mean it or not. We say I'm sorry whether we mean it or not, and there's no teeth to it. There's no strength. It's a weak, anemic apology. And I would love to see the relationships of our community transformed by stronger apologies, such as I was demonstrating with the kids, that would lead to genuine forgiveness, genuine restored relationships. And I grieve the fact that our culture has left most of us ill-equipped to resolve conflict in a healthy way at any level, including in our most intimate relationships, our families, and our marriages. This, with a weak apology, a lot of stuff, I'll just call it stuff, is unresolved. The anger and bitterness still swirls about, but now it has no legitimate place to go because we've said sorries already. But it's still there, in both parties, probably. And the next interaction between these two people might be an outlet to spill out more of that old anger and bitterness. There is an alternative, though. It's not easy, and it may be tedious at first, and it's the one that I shared with you. It has been transformative for my family, this four-step apology that I shared with the kids. So I offer it to you as a gift of sorts, a prayer, maybe, for peace in our families, in our marriages, and our relationships. Making peace, we say, is a central tenet to the way of Jesus. We want to make peace at the most basic level in our one-on-one relationships. So I'm going to review the steps, and maybe you can write them down if you have something to write them down with. I Facebooked them out to people who are on the Facebook group. The first step, you say sorry, number one, for what? This is the first step to an apology. Say sorry for what? What are you sorry for? Here's the chance to not tell the truth. Be specific. Tell the whole story of what you think happened. And here's what I find to be a kicker in our family. You also have to listen, because the person you're apologizing to may have some details that you've missed about what happened. And you have to somehow agree on what happened, at least somehow on a common story. And then the truth is, it starts to get more complicated right here already. And as a parent, when we're listening to our children apologize, sometimes we realize very clearly there's more than one apology to be made. It's not as always as easy when it's myself as part of the thing, but often this is where it already starts to get clear. We're telling the truth, what happened? And we want to cut out to our easy out the excuse, right? I'm sorry because I was busy, I had a lot of stuff on my plate, my kids were sick, I had evenings, meetings, and there's a lot going on for me. And then suddenly it's about me again and not about the person's experience that I'm apologizing to. We haven't listened then yet. So a true apology listens and emphasizes the experience of the other. Another cop-out, an easy cop-out, and a frequent one, is to blame the victim. I'm sorry, your leg was in the way, you know? I'm sorry, it was actually your fault. I mean, some version of that. This isn't a real apology. If you don't know what your apology is, what you're apologizing for, sometimes you might need to ask the offended person to tell me, what did I do that hurt or offended you? We have to keep ourselves focused on a true account of what actually happened and not our own why and not our own excuses. Be clear and specific. What did I happen? What did I do? And it leads with equal uncomfortableness to the next step. This was wrong because. It's a squirmy bit. Nobody likes to admit our own guilt. Again, we want to jump fast forward to excuse, but we may not. We need to own our part. What were the consequences of our words, actions, or inactions? This is a central tenet of Christian faith, actually, that we in our current time and generation like to gloss over. But here's the truth. We are capable of messing up. Each of us in this room. And we do so frequently. But when we gloss over our faults, we miss opportunities. Here's where many public apologies miss the mark. They often come off as various versions of, I'm sorry I got caught. Or I've seen them turned as the non-apology apology. I think of Gian Gomeshi's unwillingness to own that anything he had ever done was bad. His apology was marring his own good name and ruining his reputation and for losing his show. He did not own the devastation for the women he violated. If peace is our goal, truth-telling and owning up to our own capability of being the one at fault needs to be the way we get there. Romans 3:23 says, "For all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God." So we need to practice peacemaking by owning the fact that it could be us that has made the mistake. We have to let go of this idea that we're not capable of making mistakes, and what's more, that we cannot show our mistakes to one another. Maybe we're afraid it's going to be used against us in the future. Maybe we're afraid our reputation as a good, kind person will be irreparably damaged. Maybe we just cannot see ourselves as having done something wrong. I think we're often the heroes of our own narratives, of our own stories. But I believe we need to interrupt our own narrative every once in a while and be reminded that nobody gets to be the hero of every scene. And even the heroes mess up. Even King David, beloved of God's heart, sinned grievously. Moses was a sinner. You name me a biblical hero, and you see that the Bible has shown that person also to have clay feet. Except Jesus. If we keep showing each other our masks of perfection, we'll never be seen for ourselves. And we'll have less chance of healing and genuine, authentic restoration of relationship. Yes, it's vulnerable to say we've done wrong, but we can do this through God's strength. What if we get to be the brave ones? What if we take the initiative ourselves and model for our friends and families the braveness of naming our faults? in our intimate relationships. Because that's what it is. It's brave. It takes trust to say I messed up. And in my own experience, naming how my action has caused pain, often to someone I love, has been pivotal to causing me to truly repent and seek a new way forward. Which leads me to step 3. In the future, I. This is another gift of this extended apology. With the wrongdoing truthfully, specifically named, the pain's out there in the open. And here's where the two parties have a chance to look at the future towards reconciliation and peace. Here's where you make a plan to prevent this pain from happening again. Perhaps to make amends for what was broken or lost. Again, no apology can undo the wrong, but a good plan can prevent it from recurring, which is often the best possible option at that point. And isn't that often what we truly want, to be heard and to expect that maybe this won't happen again? Isn't that what we want more than a simple sorry? To be heard, to hear, have our story heard truthfully, to have our hurt empathized with, and to have a plan that maybe this isn't going to happen again. The goal isn't punishment, it's restored relationship. In the court cases, in the court system, Mennonites have often led the way in what's called victim-offender reconciliation, and this is about looking to the future and healing what's wrong. So that's in the future I. So let's lead through them again, see if you can remember with me, without any visual aids, because I don't have them. I am sorry for what? This is wrong because in the future I, and then we get to the step 4, will you forgive me? And how many times? It's not 100% guarantee, but it's a whole lot higher guarantee result of people who will say yes. After you've gone through a thorough apology like this, you're going to have a lot higher chance that the forgiveness is going to happen and that it's going to be genuine. And in my experience, often steps 1, 2, and 3 have revealed that the other person may have had a role to play, and we get to redo the steps 1, 2, 3, 4 again on the other side. And after that, boy, when it's my kids, we just want to play a game. We're feeling connected. We're feeling better. I want to state emphatically, this is not a guarantee. This is not a miracle worker. Perhaps the other party won't forgive. Perhaps there's not enough trust between the two of you to actually work all the way through those 4 steps. But that's the goal. So those are the 4 steps. Let's review them again one more time. I'm sorry. For what? This is wrong because in the future I, will you forgive me? Human, fragile, limited, brave, hopeful. If your life is like mine, you will have opportunities to practice. Sometimes forgiveness, though sometimes forgiveness or even apology is out of your control, but I dare you to be the brave one, to take that first step and apologize thoroughly. And I pray that you will find yourself brave enough to apologize with truth, specificity, and with a goal towards reconciliation and peace. I pray that peace, that forgiveness might flourish in your most intimate relationships. You may find, as our family has, that this process of honest, thorough apologizing, when it takes hold in your families, in your friendships, in your classrooms, in your marriages, is a game changer. I hope so. You may find that guilt and shame start to lessen. You may find that there's less poison in the system, and less stored up resentment and anger. You may find that there's more peace, more trust, more authenticity, more truth. That is my prayer. And it's that spirit that drew me to our text for this morning, Romans 12:18. It happened right in that middle of that whole text. As far as it is possible, so long as it depends on you, live peaceably with everyone. What a pearl of wisdom in the middle of a high set of standards for how we are to live with each other. to be peacemakers, to love, to show hospitality and goodness, to overcome evil with good. But in the middle of this whole challenge to the church, to the communities, is this human note, acknowledging that not everything's in our power to control, but some things are. So as far as it is possible, as long as it depends on you, live peaceably with everyone. And often it is possible. There's a bit that can depend on us. We can be the ones to step up and apologize. And when I shared those four steps on my Facebook page a little while ago, a friend commented, imagine if everyone apologized like this. So let's do that, let's imagine. What if we were all brave enough to own our weakness and apologize directly when we fall short? What if this kind of apology became normal? What if forgiveness was more normal than getting even? What if brave apologizing empowered a flagrant flourishing of forgiveness in our families? Isn't that nice? In our schools, in our workplaces, and in our town? What if Canada's epidemic of simple sorry became an epidemic of deep apologies and forgiveness instead? I'll dare to dream that dream. As far as it is possible, as long as it depends on you, live peaceably with all.